Mark My Words shares Mark Homer's contrarian views on investing, business, finance, economics, and all things money. Mark interviews the world's most successful business, finance, and money experts, as well as imparting his knowledge in a factual, direct, and no-nonsense manner. Welcome to Mark My Words, and here is your host, Mark Homer.
Okay, so clearly over the last sort of 15, 20 years, whilst we've been running Progressive, and prior to that, you know, I was investing in properties, all sorts of sort of mainly residential properties, but then I moved into commercial buildings. I've sort of worked out how to diversify our investments, how to take sort of money from various different income streams, and then, you know, make sure that money is sort of cared for, and make sure that that, you know, when there are recessions and when there are issues that come along, that we're not, you know, sort of in a really, really bad position. Clearly, it's really important to focus and to be very, very specific about your investments, and to become the best at just a few small things. Because if you try and sort of run around and do loads and loads of different things, you tend to not be very good at any of them. So you really want to be a specialist in a couple of areas. But as time goes on, what generally happens is, as you make the money and as you become good at various different strategies, in order to protect the wealth and to protect those income streams, you generally want to diversify them into more different areas. So you spread your capital and you spread you increase the number of income streams that you've got, so that you've got multiple income streams. And I always like a minimum of four significant income streams, so that if one or two are shut down, then I've still got others to rely on. This is very here and now. This is very much sort of, you know, in the good times, in normal times, when you don't need the umbrella. Generally, the income streams come in unless there's some sort of issue, and I don't know, maybe you've got an issue with HMRC or a competitor or something like that. But generally speaking, in normal times, the income streams, as long as your business running well or your property portfolio running well, the income continues. But times like now, the income, the way it turns off and the way it recovers is very uneven across different property types and across different business types. So, you know, I think it's very important to understand all that. Okay, so property is clearly a great inflation hedge. And, you know, if you buy a property and it only goes up by the rate of inflation, and I hear that a lot, you know, a lot of commentators will say stocks and shares are better because they generally go up at a higher rate, income and capital, all things combined, than property. But what these commentators don't usually take account of, because they often don't invest in property in any significant way, is that you can apply sensible debt. You can put mortgages on properties, which multiplies your returns. And what happens is, as inflation picks up or inflation takes place, the inflation erodes the mortgage. So if you've got inflation running at 2%, your mortgage is actually getting smaller in real terms by 2% per year, plus any sort of growth above the rate of inflation. So, you know, for me, one of the biggest sort of ways to diversify risk would be to get sensible mortgages on properties, you know, that devalues with inflation. And I suspect that's coming now. We've had loads of money printing. We've had lots of quantitative easing. The government has increased the money supply. That's the amount of money flowing around the economy hugely through this period. You know, they've spent or reduced the spend on coronavirus in excess of $300 billion, which is eye-watering. The difference between this recession and the previous one, the credit crunch, is that was a problem with the banks, or that was a problem of the banks. And when they increased the money supply and they printed all this extra money, that money largely went into propping up the reserves, or increasing the reserves, of the big banks. because the level of reserves that they had then were much, much lower because the regulator had decided that they could operate with much less cash. Clearly, since then, or during the credit crunch, the regulator basically said, you need to increase your reserves massively. And the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve duly sort of stepped in, increased the money supply massively, and there were big bank bailouts and loans and whatever else. So they went into the bank reserves, probably not really into the real economy. The difference with this time is that a lot of this money is going into the real economy, and it's also going into the pockets of consumers. Now, at the moment, consumers are all locked up, and they can't do, they can buy stuff online, and, you know, they can maybe get a takeaway and various things like that, but they're not spending like they normally would do. And whilst unemployment is going to rise, and it is rising, and I suspect the Bank of England thinks it's going to 2.6 million, I think, you know, sort of, 7% plus 8% is very plausible. We could quite quickly, despite that, we could quite quickly be in a situation where supply, i.e. the amount of goods being produced and the amount of services available, don't keep up with that demand, and therefore we get quite a bit of inflation. And that could be, you know, we're not talking even high single digit inflation, but it will probably run above the 2% target. So maybe the money will be devaluing. It may be, 3, 4, 5% potentially per annum. So we just need to be aware of that risk, and having mortgages and having real assets. So that would be properties or equities. Equities are shares in companies, not so much bonds or not bonds. But if you have equities, i.e. shares and property, as inflation picks up, the values of the properties and the equity should grow, at least as much as the rate of inflation, all other things being equal. So it's a good hedge, a good sort of way to diversify your risk and to, you know, reduce the risk of inflation eating your capital away. So my view on debt or mortgages is that, you know, I'll usually try and leverage up maybe 70-75% or whatever the bank will let me do. But after the event, I'll let, over time, as the properties go up, I'll try and let the mortgages drift down to about 50% loan to value. So over time, they're at 50% loan to value. I'm pretty comfortable at that, and maybe I'll sort of re-leverage to that level. But my view is, if they're at 50%, you know, you sort of reduce the risk, even if property values drop 20-25%, and the lender suddenly wants the money back, you can probably remortgage them elsewhere and get yourself out of a hole. And you know, I just think risk is reduced. If you don't have any mortgages, clearly you're going to have your returns are going to be reduced significantly, and inflation, you're not going to get the benefit of inflation eroding the real value of your mortgages. I would say, people often say to me, is it a good idea to diversify your risk by, you know, getting fixed rates? And fixed rates have their place. I would prefer just to let the mortgages drift down to about 50%. Keep plenty of cash back, stay relatively liquid. Because I've always found in the past fixed rates, yeah, they may be lower for a period of time, but generally the risk or the expectation is already baked into the fixed rate of whether, you know, interest rates are going to go up or down. And those clever guys in London have then got to make their margin on top. So it's a bit like insurance, all things being equal. You'll be paying out more on fixed rates over the long run than you will variable rates. It wouldn't work for them to offer that insurance product. I'm not the biggest fan of them. I think, you know, if you want to reduce your risk, let the loan to value come down and also keep plenty of cash back. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier on, it's really important if you're going to diversify risk to initially go very deep, don't diversify, be very, very sort of specific, choose one or two strategies and focus like hell on them and become really, really good. That's the opposite of diversifying. And this is the dichotomy. This is, you know, I'm sort of arguing against myself here, but I think it's really important in the early stages to get very, very good at something, you know, spend 10,000 hours on it, you know, become the expert and become the best at it. Whether that's single lets, whether that's HMOs, you know, might be development, it might be service accommodation. You've got to get brilliant. The reason I say that is because, you know, I'm not sort of doing this presentation about diversifying risk to persuade you to go into 10 strategies and, you know, just become slightly good at all of them, because you won't get very far. You'll sort of make all sorts of mistakes. You won't be as good as your competitors. You know, you need to be the master of your game. And you get that by going very deep and not doing many strategies. But once you've perfected a strategy, once you've got lots of single lets, or maybe you've got lots of HMOs, or maybe you've got lots of serviced accommodations, then move on to diversifying. You know, I started out, I think maybe 2002, maybe 2003, something like that. And I was buying abroad and doing new build and all sorts of things that I didn't really understand. And then I went very, very, very deep by buying lots of single lets, ex-council houses around Peterborough, did several hundred of those for ourselves and clients, and didn't really diversify away from doing that until maybe, I don't know, maybe 2010, probably 10 years, something like that. I started doing those in 05, and then 2000, maybe 10, 11, 12, something like that. Started taking commercial buildings and then converting them. So I got very good at one thing, did more commercial, maybe 2010, 11, 12, bought some offices for us, you know, and along the way ended up with retail, you know, and have some commercial tenants there now as well. And clearly, you know, during that period, you know, after a good 5 years, probably started, you know, buying HMOs as well. But I got very good at sort of the single lets first. So, you know, I've diversified as we've gone along. I think the tenant types for HMOs are slightly different from single lets. So there's some good diversification there. I think serviced accommodation is completely different because you're effectively running hotels. And I think this coronavirus period has been the perfect example of why you should diversify. Single lets and HMOs, generally speaking, in our area, they've been fine through coronavirus, and they're still fine and voids, you know, at a sort of normal level. What I would say is, as time has gone on, it's become quite clear that lots of serviced accommodation units in certain areas of the country have suffered hugely. You know, we had a small number, you know, and they've been empty or had very few bookings. Now, is this going to go on into the future? No. Next time there'll be another recession, and it'll be a different set of ingredients. So a different cake will be baked, and maybe the single lets will be affected, or maybe the HMOs will be affected, and the serviced accommodation won't be. But this time, the serviced accommodation has been really severely affected. And if you only had serviced accommodation, you're going to be really badly hit. Therein lies the reason why you would diversify and why you would get different sort of property types. I'll give you another couple of examples. I've got a couple of friends, very good friends from school. One has lots of retail and coffee shops in the middle of a town which is quite close to here. Let's say he's got 40 plus of these type units. Last year, I think it was the first rent quarter, they got something like 10 to 20% of the rent in that they were due, which is clearly such a big deal. And, you know, thankfully, the bank were very understanding, told them that they could just forget, you know, about payments, I think, for 6 months. And I think they've managed to sort some of their tenants out, but they're still clearly, you know, not out of the woods. They've got lots of retail units, and their tenants are struggling and suffering big time because the town centre is shut. It's been open and shut, you know, a little bit along, but, you know, they've been really badly hit. So they've got some residential as well. Largely, I think those guys are paying, and they've got some other income streams as well. So they've managed to, you know, they've got other sort of, you know, types of commercial buildings and, you know, that has sort of seen them through. But if they didn't, they could have ended up going bust. Got another friend who has got another sort of regional city, not that far from here. He's got lots of leisure, so that would be pubs, and sort of bars, and he's got sort of hotels and things like that, and some retail, and I think, some restaurants as well. Again, really badly hit. Lots of the tenants not paying rent. Bank, being quite receptive, he'd have some other sort of uses, maybe warehouses where they are paying the rent, and he'd have a really good trading business. I think has been hit in some ways, but he'd be importing goods from overseas, but that has sort of seen them through, but very, very badly hit on their property portfolio, both in rents and probably in capital values as well. So two perfect examples there of, they're the sort of master of two sort of types of tenure types, but two areas that have been really badly hit. Got another friend who's got lots of warehouses, got lots of sort of industrial units, storage, distribution, absolutely fine. Most of those guys are paying. Lots of them might be operating trade counters. It might be screw fixes, things like that. Selling things on the internet. Those guys have done okay. So you can see the coronavirus is very, very uneven. You could say, well, what did well and what didn't in the previous credit crunch? Well, I wasn't really in commercial back then, but retail probably wasn't great. I don't think warehousing was brilliant either. And maybe leisure suffered a little bit as well. So, and what really got hit were the commercial values, because the banks wouldn't lend on that sort of stuff. So there were different set of ingredients. And because of that, the cake that was baked was different. In the residential side, the rental market was good, really strong in the last recession generally. But I'd say the capital values really suffered, unlike now. The market has been very, very strong over the last year for residential. They've been selling, maybe because people want to move, maybe because of the stamp duty holiday, various different things. But, the point is, there'll be another recession, there'll be another downturn, and the issues will be uneven. The results of the shock will be uneven, because something different will happen. We had the ERM crisis, sort of early 90s, exchange rate mechanism. We were pegged to the European currency, I think. I was a little bit young, I was only 11 or 12, so obviously from what I've read. The Chancellor of the Exchequer tried to defend sterling. In the end, he couldn't retain sterling's sort of value in the band. He kept putting interest rates up to try and defend it, and effectively created a property market crash, and residential was very badly hit. And landlords would have been very badly hit, because obviously the interest rate on their mortgages went up sky high. So just be sort of mindful of, be very, very focused on building that single let portfolio, HMOs, whatever it is, but do it for a while, and then look for the next strategy to move on to once you've become the master and, got a good rump of deals, good properties, then move into another to create multiple income streams and diversify against different property types. You'll know with Rob and myself, we've got this training business. We have another sort of training business which teaches people all about Amazon. It teaches people how to present on stage. And there'll be sales training in there. So that's sort of slightly diversified, the training company. Then we have a letting agency, so that's another sort of independent, non-related income stream. We have the income stream from our properties. We're doing developments, although I don't usually sell them, so you probably wouldn't call that an income stream. And then, we have other sort of equities, and stock market investments, and those create other income streams. Again, diversified, non-related, and then in addition to that, we have PPN, which is a sort of local property networking club, slightly related to this, obviously. But you know, I'd say this business during the pandemic, we've gone online and managed to defend it. It's doing quite well. PPN, the local sort of property networking clubs, clearly they can't run at all, and we've just got no way of fixing that. And so that income stream has completely, pretty much stopped for it. Well, I mean, it has. It's completely stopped. The letting agency doing well, you know, and being sort of quite insulated through this. You know, and our property portfolio, you know, doing well, you know, and income streams doing well, and sort of shares doing well. So you this is the whole reason for diversifying and having the multiple income streams. You don't know what will necessarily do well and what won't, but you should probably, they need to be in your sphere of knowledge and understanding. But within that, you want to make them relatively unrelated. I think that's the most important point. The next recession will be completely different. And of course, the other thing is the banks and what they like and what they don't like. At the moment, you know, I've been talking to Lloyds. They've been out and basically said any retail, any leisure, hotels, any more than 30% in your portfolio, we won't let you buy any more, and we'll be telling you to sell them off. You know, and RBS stopped lending completely. So again, they are forcing diversification. I said it's interesting about warehousing is flavour of the month for you because of the internet. You know, retail is moving off the high street onto the industrial estates, isn't it? It's moving into warehouses and storage centres on industrial estates, which are then, you know, which all the delivery vans are turning up to pick the goods to deliver to your home. Well, you know, they're delivering all the orders that you've made on the internet. So all the retail is effectively moving from the high street into these sort of industrial areas and into the warehouse areas. And, you know, he sort of said, yeah, we quite like those and we like supermarkets, although we're just catching up on that. But flavour of the month for us is residential because of how it's been going up in value. So it's quite interesting. They don't also have the longest term view, I find, the banks, and they tend to herd together and follow each other, which I think that's what seems to be happening. So you got sort of warehousing, storage and distribution, offices at the moment. Well, they're definitely not flavour of the month for the banks. They may start thinning out, I guess, if tenants are coming to the end of the tenancy. Why would they extend at the moment whilst their staff can't go back? When can their staff go back? So the key is to have lots of different tenant types, different tenures, who, you know, some will be affected by the internet, some won't be. A pandemic, you know, interest rates going up, some will be affected, some won't. Some might be affected by Brexit, some, you know, all these things have happened and we know what the result is. Some may be affected overtly by a credit crunch, some won't, or a war. And it won't be one of those things. Next time it's going to be something else. My point is that something comes along, a shock to the system that it's a black swan, you can't foresee it. It has different features, therefore it creates a different issue and different property types or, you know, businesses are affected. Some are and some aren't. So if you've got a few and you've invested in you've got a few different businesses and a few different property types, then you're likely to be okay. I also think that if you're going to diversify your portfolio and your business interests, that you should be diversifying your supply chain. It's always important to have at least two or three suppliers for everything that you've got in your business. Because one may suddenly go bust, or one may put their prices up, or you may be locked into one and subservient, you know, and they may have you over a barrel. If you're using two or three, then you can easily switch to another. Merchant accounts, banks especially. Banks can cause all sorts of problems. You know, they might freeze your account. I've seen that with some of our customers. You know, all of a sudden they may say, we want the money back on, you know, your loan, or, you know, all the different sort of property mortgages you've got. So I would be with at least three banks and have good relationships with them, just in case. So, you know, if one of them gets into trouble and they try and get the money back, or you get account froze because of fraud or something else, or, you know, maybe you're the victim of fraud and people steal money from your bank account, or the bank goes bust and takes some of your money with it and you can't get it for a little while, you need to be diversified across different banks. You know, for our training businesses, we're with the same, we have the same current accounts, but the savings accounts are with two different building societies, and they are different from, you know, our bankers, you know, where our current accounts are for our training business. You know, in our property business, the money is held in another bank, which is unrelated. So you know, I would definitely be looking to diversify. Even sort of with, you know, equities and bonds, when I'm buying those, I'd use two different platforms. Maybe the victim of fraud on one of them, or something may happen, so I'm relatively diversified there. You know, so yeah, I think it's very, very important, you know, that you sort of identify where the risks are in your business, and then sort of diversify all of the suppliers, solicitors. You know, you might use one solicitor. I used one for a while. She went bankrupt because she had a dispute with her ex-husband, which meant she couldn't practice anymore. She suddenly disappeared. So I needed to find a new solicitor. Very common that you'll suddenly lose your supplier, or they leave, and then you're left with one that's not very good, who doesn't have much knowledge. So very important to sort of, you know, have lots of these suppliers. You know, with the properties, I'm always looking, you know, even refuse collectors, we'd have two of them. You know, internet service providers for our office, we'll have two connections. We won't just rely on one. You know, if we're, you know, cleaning companies, for properties or for our own, you know, for our businesses, all that stuff, you know, even sort of individuals, cleaners, staff, you know, I sometimes prefer to get, depends what it is, but I prefer to get maybe two part-time rather than one full-time sometimes, because then, you know, you sort of hedged your bets, depends what it is they're doing. But you need backup, you need resource, people get ill, people leave. So I hope that's been of value and that's helped you, sort of giving you some ideas of how to diversify your businesses, your property investments, your supply chain, and, you know, your money across different banks and loans, savings accounts, and, you know, your investments. I think it's very, very important. Because something will come along. There'll be a shock. There'll be some sort of issue with the economy. And, you know, that can put you in a difficult place. So I had a chat with one of my friends. He's a really wise guy. He's been in property a hell of a long time, decades and decades. He's probably 60. Made loads of money. And he said to me, the worst year I had was when three big things all went wrong in one year. He said, if it was one or two, I'd just have sort of cracked on. He said, it didn't kill me, but it caused me a massive load of grief. And that's what can happen. And, you know, I had, you know, sort of a couple of pretty big things happen early on, start of last year, you know, and thankfully, you know, I've got my health and I could deal with it and I could sort of navigate through it. And we had the virus in the middle of it. But, you know, if a couple of two, three big things happen, and there's a recession, do you know what I mean? And you're not diversified, it may end up killing you, and, you know, you end up going bust, and we want to avoid that at all costs. So that's been Mark Homer. I hope you've got value from that, and I'll hand back over to Kevin.
Hi, Mark. Welcome back. We've got some questions for you, Mark, if that's okay. So can you hear me?
Yeah, far away.
Yeah, lovely. So Adam's asking, just to clarify, Mark, would you advise to have variable interest only single lets over fixed interest only?
Well, that very much depends on the deal that you're being offered by the bank, and also how much cash you've got, how diversified you are across your other investments. Can you afford, if interest rates go up 3%, can you afford to pay that for 3-4 years until you get out of it? If you can, and you've got enough cash and you can liquidate other investments to do that, then in the long run, if you took out all interest-only mortgages versus all fixed-rate mortgages, in the long run, you'll save money having the interest-only ones. It's a bit like if you didn't take any insurance out. In the long run, you know, over a long period, you're likely to save money by not having insurance. But the reason people have insurance or have fixed rates is because, you know, if something big happens, they haven't got the cash at that point to fix the problem. And, you know, because they don't plan. You're better to self-insure. It's cheaper. Why wouldn't you take the difference and put it into a savings account each month and then use that if trouble comes along? Insurance companies only make money because they charge you, you know, more than it costs to fix the problems. That's the nature of insurance, and a fixed rate is just insurance.
Awesome. Ralph is asking, do you think that we will have a deep recession this time around?
We've had a deep recession, and we're about to have, or we're in another deep recession. It's guaranteed, isn't it? If you shut a large chunk of the economy down, GDP, which is the size of the economy, the amount of money flowing around the economy, will reduce. You know, we had it reduced, I think, more than it's ever reduced since the Second World War. In the certainly the first lockdown, probably the last lockdown, and definitely this lockdown. So yeah, it's been I'd say at least a double dip recession.
Adam, another question is thoughts on, what are your thoughts on Airbnb for properties? Or do you like Airbnb?
Well, Airbnb is serviced accommodation. I think it's a great strategy for the right properties in the right areas. It's all about the vacancy, or should I say the occupancy rate. If you keep them full, keep them really appealing, keep the pictures really good, people get people coming back, and it's therefore in the right location, maybe a holiday location, can be brilliant. But they take a lot of management, but you can make a lot of cash flow.
Lovely. And the final question from Clive is, what is your view on refinancing a portfolio and being liquid and then using the money as security to further borrow and invest to grow more?
Yeah, that's a pretty sort of common strategy. You know, I that's what I've done over the years. I've refinanced my properties. I've never spent it, but I've used it to invest in more properties or in equities, you know, where I can get a higher return than the money I'm borrowing on those properties. I might be borrowing the money on those properties at 3%, and then I invest in more properties, make 15 to 20%, you know, all in capital and income, leveraged returns. And then maybe, I don't know, maybe I make 6 or 7% income and capital rolled up in funds in the stock market, or, you know, I buy tracker funds, very long-term stuff. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that's but, you know, over the long term, my strategy is once I've done the initial refinance and got my money back, I'll usually let the loan to values drift down to 50%, because I just think that reduces the risk and also reduces the need for fixed rate mortgages, because the proportion of your costs that are interest reduces as the loan to value of the mortgage goes down.